Boing, boing. Boing, boing. This kangaroo will do nicely. Boing, boing, boing.
Ooh, ooh. What's the kangaroo for?
The kangaroo will steal the jewels, and then we'll steal the jewels from the kangaroo.
Ooh. Why don't we just steal the jewels?
We are stealing the jewels.
I mean, directly from the jewel place. That sort of cuts out the middle kangaroo.
You idiot! If we steal the jewels, they'll think that we stole the jewels. If a kangaroo steals the jewels, then a kangaroo has stolen the jewels.
All right, let's just do it. I don't need to know why.
Man, I like cream.
Oh, yeah, me too.
I like all sorts. Some people just like some sorts of cream. Just maybe just ice cream. But I like all sorts of cream. Hand cream, ice cream.
Oh, and there's a lot of types.
There are. So I was very excited by our latest sponsor, International Cream Club.
Oh, they're great.
I just got my first installment Tuesday.
Oh, I got mine. I haven't opened it yet.
Oh, you better open it. Some of it needs to go in the fridge. So, and I'm blown away. They've got this rich French cream. I've got this face cream. I feel like I look about 20 years younger.
You do. You do. I can't wait to get into mine.
Anyway, International Cream Club curated creams from around the globe, reflecting the smoothest and silkiest of human artistic vision across the spectrum of Le Monde de Crème.
Once a member of International Cream Club, you have a passport to taste, feel, smell, indulge in richness in all its definitions, from the heavenly richness of a French crème vanille on the tongue to the moisturizing, refreshing luxury of an Oriental Renewal crème on the face. You will be rewarded many times over.
You will. International Cream Club isn't just a cream subscription service. They've got those. They're done. Boring. It's access to cream experts, creamophiles, creamatologists, cream attendants, 24 hours a day.
Yeah, because you don't schedule that sort of thing, your cream questions.
No. So International Cream Club, highly encourage you to seek them out, to become a member, to start exploring a whole world of creams out there.
I remember as a kid when I'd be reading BC in the funny papers, and Clumsy Carp would do something, and the joke would be based on some personality trait he had, which I don't remember what it was. Clumsiness, I suppose. But you had to know that. So it wouldn't be funny unless you've been reading BC for a very long time.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Anyway, welcome back to Talking About Miracle Nutrition, where we examine the 400-plus episodes of Hardy White's Miracle Nutrition from the perspective of somebody who was really there. So you're not just getting the parts that were intended for you to get, but you're getting everything that was left, all the garbage that was cut out and left on the floor.
Yeah, we're giving you some insight. You know, usually magicians hide their secrets, but what we're doing is we're taking the trick and we're just going to ruin it for you by showing you what's behind the scenes.
Yeah, it's like, oh, doesn't that look like a Western village? Come with me and walk around the back. We never finished painting the back of it. That's what we're going to show you, and that'll be of interest. And I think what it does, it expands your universe.
Yeah, most of the art I see is really incomplete. I would like to go to a museum on a day where they take every single painting and flip it around. So you're just seeing the back of every single work.
Oh, that is inadvertently brilliant.
Oh, inadvertently brilliant, eh? Well, is it?
Yeah, anyway, maybe. I'm interested in that, though. They won't let you touch stuff. So you go to a museum and they're like, no, you can't. We got all this interesting junk that's compelling. Some of it has alluring texture, and they won't let you touch it.
Yeah, I know.
I think it's a little different in France. I remember going to a cave when I was there one time, and they had stalagmites, and they had stalactites. And I didn't want to touch it, because I'm used to going to caves here where they're like, don't touch the stalactites and stalagmites. They took millions of years to form. And in France, they're like, no, touch the heck out of it. Go ahead, rub it, knock on it. Take a chunk out of it. Human beings are part of the environment. There's nothing you can do that isn't natural.
Yeah, I feel that way about ruining things. I think, well, I'm part of this universe. I am part of the ecosystem that's here to ruin. I'm sort of a mushroom. I'm here to break things down, aren't I?
I don't know. Yeah, you are sort of a mushroom. That's an interesting analogy.
Yeah, or a maggot.
You're getting closer and closer to the truth.
That's the truth.
Bosun.
Yes, Captain.
I know.
You know what, Captain?
I know that you are actually the captain and I'm the bosun. That you have been fooling me this whole voyage.
Fool is a harsh word.
Deceiving.
Lying to you, yes.
Pretending that I'm the captain when really you are.
Yes.
All the important decisions about the operation of the boat...
ship?
...were yours.
Aye.
But why?
Well, you seem to have the desire to be thought important. You had the need to lead. So, to preserve your self-esteem, we let you believe you were captain.
I see. Well... but I am the bosun. Bosuns are skilled.
You're not exactly the bosun.
No.
No.
Then what? Speak up.
You're a parrot, sir.
I beg your pardon.
A parrot. Sort of a long-lived bird.
A bird. Well, this is not a uniform.
No, sir. It's feathers.
Feathers? Forgive my speechlessness. I'm nonplussed.
You're a good bird, though, and we all love you.
I'm a good bird.
A very good bird.
A very good bird.
You are. Who is?
I am. I am. Bosun. Bosun. Come here.
I'm here, Captain.
Look at the sea. Look at the sea.
It's beautiful, Captain.
Dismissed. Dismissed.
I'm the captain. I'm the bosun. I'm the ship. I'm the sea. I'm a bird. I'm the sky. I'm the world. I'm everything under the boats. I'm everything in the sea. I'm everything in the captain. I'm me. I'm the boat. I'm the wood in the boat. I'm the history of wood. I'm the word wood. I'm a tree. I'm the idea of trees. I'm the sky. I'm the universe. I'm the boat. I'm the captain. I'm the water. I'm the water in the sea. I'm the bottom of the sea. I'm everything under me and me. I'm the captain. I'm the bosun. I'm the boat. I'm the wind. I'm the wind. I'm the idea of wind. I'm the things in between wind. I'm nothing. I'm nothing. I'm nothing. I'm nothing.
Mr. Nagai, I haven't seen you in a while. Ah. Where have you been? Not thirsty these days?
I have been busy.
We've been very busy here, too.
Ah. Is that so? You must be very lonely. Yes. I would be very lonely if I was an old man like you and my daughter moved out. Yes.
Because I am a house, I contain many souls. And those souls affect me because they are inside of me. And sometimes I confuse their thoughts with my thoughts. My world contains their worlds, but their worlds are largely hidden from me. They affect me, but I have no access to them. They're strangers to one another as well. All of our worlds, an infinite amount hidden from one another, but inside each other. How can this be? I cry out. I am a house. Am I contained as well? I am contained by all who see me. They have my world in theirs. But they don't know what they have. I don't know whether I'm speaking just for myself or other people as they get older, but I feel the older I get, that I don't get any more anything, really. I just sort of change, and I'm not moving from any alpha towards omega. I'm just sort of meandering along, and then I find solutions, and none of them seem like permanent solutions. So you could read a great self-help book, and you say, whoa, this has turned my life around. Here I am. I'm now off on a pristine road. But then pretty soon you go, well, this isn't working anymore. I'm going to have something totally different, and it might be unrelated. You think, well, how is that possible? If you're solving a mystery, don't things unfold and then they unfold and you get closer to the truth? And I'm not finding that to be the case. I'm finding that things unfold and then they just stay at the same type of complexity. You know, so I look at the world and I go, wow, it's baffling. And I learn a little more and I think, well, that I guess that's what learning is like in when there's an infinite amount of information. So you can learn stuff, but it never becomes a percentage of the thing. You never get closer. Because also the questions start to change. So you say, why are you telling me this on the can't at least for the space of a radio show? Can't that have a purpose at least? No. I'm sorry. I mean, I guess it could. But I feel really that one of the things that you don't want to do is ever put anything in a kiln. I mean, you can, but be aware that that's just going to make it more brittle. It's easy to have something. Just keep your clay soft. Can I still eat out of it? Yes, you just get little bits of clay in your food. Now, that's something we done when we were children. So I made a bowl out of clay. Well, that's not the right kind of clay. You can't fire it. It doesn't matter. It's clay. You're going to eat out of Play-Doh. I'm going to try, Mama. I've made a bowl out of modeling clay, and I'd like to try to eat out of it, Mama. No, I don't think that's a good idea. Please, it says non-toxic. That's a low bar. Non-toxic. Yeah, well, I mean, it's more than you can say for, you know, alcohol or something.
Well, that's true.
And you eat food out of alcohol.
No, we don't.
But it's different for a bowl. Also, old pewter that has lead in it. Don't eat out of that, or don't eat lead, I guess. I don't know. But you can make a bowl. Anything can be a bowl. And especially a large banana leaf. And I've seen that because it could be a hat, too. For an orangutan, the hat is a bowl, is a bowl, is a hat. Who else is that true for? Don Quixote.
His helmet was a wash bowl, or shave bowl. They don't have those so much anymore. I'm surprised. I'm surprised that they don't have those shave. It's a bowl with a rim, and then there's like a notch cut out of it for your neck. Okay? And I'm surprised that you can't go to like Brooklyn or something and say, oh, I have this vintage shave shop, and we even have these, I don't know what they are, 16th century men's shave basin / Don Quixote helmet. I think they would sell. Maybe not. Who knows? We don't want to. I like the old ways of doing things sometimes are best. So I'm so torn. I want a long beard, but I also want all these shaving accoutrements. What can I do? And they go, you can get a strop and a straight edge razor and then just shave your arms. So that's a thought. I'll grow a long beard and then I'll just have all these, I'll mix up the shaving cream in a cup and I'll lather up my arm and then I'll use the straight edge razor. And to be honest, if I'm gonna slip, I would rather cut my arm, not my wrist. Well, I don't really have hair on my wrist. Unless I don't think I do. I just looked. It's like I'm looking at the time. I'm sorry, I gotta go. I have hair. Turns out there is hair on my wrist. I've got to run. I need an arm shave. We don't do that, but that is all taste. And there are people in other cultures who do things like they shave their nose or forehead or parts that we don't shave. Do they have hair on them? No. So, I don't know. I wash also. Do you wash every part of your body? I thought I did. And then I've turned out there's a few I didn't. And they're the creasier parts, I think. There's some of us, parts of us are like a Shar Pei or a pug or something. There's little folds and in their ear, a lot of them in our ears or belly button. Those are the two biggies, really. And my ears, I hadn't been going good because I'm afraid to go too deep with the Q-tip. They even tell you, don't put that in there. I go, what am I supposed to do? You go, wash it out with tea tree oil or something. Oh, I don't know if that works. The Egyptians, this is my understanding, the Egyptians, when they would mummify their kings or they were treating depression, they would put like a knitting needle up somebody's nose, squish it around, and then, and to kind of liquefy the brains or just like, you know, wrap it around the end of the needle, kind of the gooky part like it's natto, stringy Japanese breakfast food natto, and then pull the brain out through the nose. And I used to have mean old teacher used to do that as punishment. I used to hate that. We used to hate that. And I've never had that's where the expression comes from. Anyway, to have your brain pulled out of your nose by an Egyptian. It's a feeling. It's a mood. I like to examine why people are listen to the radio. Now, I'm not trying to talk you out of it, but I'm not sure you do. Do you know even why you're listening?
I just want to be entertained.
Entertained, all right. Well, anything else?
Keep me company.
Yes, getting closer. What are you getting to, Hardy? I would love it if it was just, I just need some noise on so I don't hear the voices in my head. I feel like that's what I'm able to give you. If I was advertising myself as a painter, I'd say, realistically, what can you paint? I mean, well, not much. It's very small. If I concentrate, a very small space uniformly. But nothing like you think. But I'll be honest with you what I can give you. I'll still insist that you take it. But I'm not going to force you to take something that you don't need.
Well, maybe I don't need what you're selling.
Psych, I'm not selling anything.
Maybe I don't need what you're giving away.
And that is true. Sometimes I feel like I've stopped you on the sidewalk and I'm handing you a pamphlet and you go, no, I don't even want this to throw away. You're burdening me. Just come on, take it. It's free. I don't care if it's free. You're giving me something. Now I'm burdened with it. I got to throw it away or put it in my pocket. I don't want it. And what if it says something on it that I disagree with? I stick it in my pocket.
I take that to my dry cleaner. Now my dry cleaner thinks I'm into what you're into. No thank you. No thank you.
And that is often what I... But then I think, well, so... No, I don't know. I don't know. I think, well, maybe you don't... Maybe I'll just cut out the middleman and put it right in your pocket without you knowing it. Because, I mean, if I leave it up to you, say, do you want to receive this thing I'm giving you on the radio? You might say no. So I feel like maybe I should trick you into taking it. And, how would I do that?
I insist that you keep listening. Hey, I know what I'll do. I don't want to... I'll tell you I'm doing this so I'm morally absolved. I'll prey on your fears. Say, oh, you don't want to be left out and not listen to me, do you? Well, maybe not.
No, you don't. But keep listening.
It always stuns me that people can be bullied by strangers or by a voice or something. I've even felt that about certain commercials. I say, man, I better run out right now and get that thing. I feel like, are they going to come get me? I'm so afraid of this person. I want them to be my friend. That's it'd be like at school. Maybe if the bully likes me, that they won't hurt me. Ooh. Is that really a good tactic? My tactic was, maybe if the bully doesn't think I'm a human being, they won't bully me because they won't say I won't enter their consciousness. That's what I tried to do. Just try to be... I would try to camouflage myself spiritually. Or just as a... So maybe he's not really there. And that doesn't mean being quiet.
Now, this next act is a little unusual, to be honest. I've never seen anything like it. I doubt our audience has.
Is this even a good idea?
That's a good point, Oliver. Of course it's a good idea, though, because they are provocative and creative and strange and interesting and just plain weird. Please welcome Flaya Bondo.
Same with anointing brains with balls the cool kids meet. Y'all do a massive half duke at Tire Kid Street where the falls run fleet and the train's on time. Rub me down with portrait oil. Mine is the one with the tab turn left. It's fine. I don't have no cooties. I got your spit and you got mine. Booties everywhere in stores that sell underwear. But I enjoy the clean, fresh air of New Spring. Fair to say I employ mean demons also, though. I contain the multiverse. Two-verse, three-verse, multi-chorus, none. I'm not done. I got a joke about another one, and then a guy named Who, an athlete from the 50s. He's on first, and he's in his 50s.
Parade! This is Hardy White, and I am here at the Miracle Nutrition Parade. I love looking down there at all the families that are out here, all the other kind of associations. I don't know what they are. Private armies, some of them. There's uniforms. They could be marching bands. Some of them are watching. There's people of all shapes and sizes that look like maybe different species of humans that come in from the past. Everybody loves a parade, and everything that requires a parade can be a sort of a homecoming, even Halloween. I know there are many people that come home special for Halloween, and a lot of people, especially from the past, will do this. When we were scared of ghosts, sorcerers, and all things like that. The first float we have is made entirely of tissue paper. Tissue paper first came into the American consciousness in the 19th century when it was used to blow noses. After a pandemic and a lot of bloody tissues in the street, the kids would pick up the bloody red tissues and stick them on cars and things. And that's how we got the first floats. And now we can synthetically reproduce the green and red tissues that were the product of diseased ancestors. Now this next one, oh, this is a marching band. Look at all these kids playing instruments. I think it's so important that we teach children how to play French horn or flute passably in school. Because there might come a time where they need to do that. Who knows? I know some children say, I learned these things in band, and then I went on, and at one point I had to blow the shofar for my congregation, and I knew how to do the embouchure.
Tomorrow's peradventure weather, partly cloudy skies, chance of precipitation 30%, lows in the high 80s.
It is our job to make the world better for creatures and their surroundings. Blessed means happy, and some who are sick or oppressed are not happy. Perhaps they will have a reward later, but how do I know that? So I actively try to ensure that they are happy now if I can.
Bless the poor, because they ain't happy.
Remind yourselves and others that the poor need help. Bless the meek, because they ain't happy. Actively defend them from bullies, right now. Bless those who are victims of injustice, because they ain't happy. We need justice now, not some promise of post-death space justice. Bless the merciful, because they ain't happy. Sometimes you gotta give things up to do what's right, so help those people who forego revenge. Bless the innocent souls, because they ain't always happy, because they have their world shattered by fear and loss, and they are sweet and often children, and so they need guidance, because the bad stuff in the world messes with your head. Something that messes with my head is my memories and my perception of time. I have recently rediscovered my grandmother's diaries. They're really not diaries as much as they're calendar books, and she's written into them the specifics of the day, what went on. So not her deepest feelings or anything, but this is actually more useful. It's, you know, where she went shopping, you know, what we all did on various days. Well, I discovered some things about myself. Now, some of these entries I vaguely remember from being 4 years old or something, especially right around four or something. I had some memories. So I'm reading this thing, and I realize that there are a few, maybe three, four, five very early memories that in my head are saying, oh, they must be spaced out over a long period of time when I was little, right? So I was remembering the house I grew up in for the first 5 years of my life. And then I read my grandmother's diary, and I realize that some of this is just like 1 month. All happened within like a month when I was four
or a C, you know, a couple months. And that's really crazy. All these things that I thought were in a different place or in a different order, they're all happening. Like, I just have a real specific memory of the fall of that year. And that is strange to me and has slightly changed the way I see myself. And my world changes all the time because the past changes constantly. It doesn't. It's fixed. It might be for God, but it ain't fixed for me because I can't see it but in parts. And then I remember some things. I misremember them. But it's revealed to me out of order, completely out of order. So I might find things out about the past years from now. Isn't that strange?
Yes.
It is. There could be things going on right now, simultaneous to this, that I couldn't possibly know about now, but I will know about later, thus changing the present somehow. No, I don't know. Gosh, these are a lot of interesting things to think about. I don't know that they are very interesting. I find them burdensome sometimes because I've tried to use them to think about, to satisfy the nagging feelings I have. Friends, do you feel out of shit? Like, what should I be doing? What's this all about? All these unanswerable questions you say. You think they're unanswerable because we don't have enough time to answer them. And I say, no, they're unanswerable even because of time. If you didn't have time, you might be able to answer them. But the fact is that time is making them unanswerable. So bless us, we are but a driven leaf. And I'm floating on this river with you, and I'm so confused, and so much of the time I'm afraid. Oh, I'm afraid I'm going to die. I'm afraid I'm going to get sick and die. I'm afraid I'm going to have to face my death or your death or death or afraid of the end of things, this suffering, afraid of so many things. Oh, are you ruled by your fears? I don't know enough to be ruled by them. I can't. Bless them if they're trying to rule me. I'm unruly because sometimes I don't even know what I'm afraid of, or sometimes I forget I'm afraid of things, or I get distracted. And I think that that would make me a bad customer. And that it does with being a regular customer, because I remember jingles and I forget what they're for. So you're going to remember our product, will I? I remember the chord progression, but I don't remember what it was for, whether it was for pants or macaroni. So you did a kind of a good job in that you created an earworm. The bad part is you can't see an earworm because it's in your ear. If you can, you know, if it's something I can't get that image out of my head. What is it? It's this type of pants they want me to buy. Now, this is so Ken Nordine and Levi's, this is true for me. So that they used this wonderful sound artist to do ads for Levi's, and the pants would, there were magical pants that flew around, these jeans. And then Ken would be like, you know, Levi's jeans.
Levi's, they fly around.
They fly around
because they're the flying jeans.
Flying jeans, like that. And then I go, I have to have these pants. And I know what it's for. I still know it's for pants. But other things like, you know, just jingles. And sometimes I don't know unless the product is in the words. But otherwise, what? I don't know. What is that for? What's that make you want to buy? So bless everyone who's trying to manipulate me. I promise. I apologize for my short attention span. I wish I was more malleable like clay. At least I have not fired myself in the kiln of rigidity of thought. I have not become incurious by curing my wet clay. See what I'm saying? I have not. I can be crushed and remolded. I advise you not to get into the kiln, because you won't, maybe you won't always want to be a cup, or a cup that you could put pencils in, a pencil cup.
I'd love to make you... I wish I could have made my grandfather a clay Yahtzee / Kismet dice cup. Line it with felt. I think maybe I did. But I don't know what happened to it. What if my... I bet my uncle took it when my grandfather died. I was like, why would you take my crafts? Just to make me feel bad? That's what I think sometimes. I need this even though it's meaningless. All right, you take it. I'll be left with only my memories. But I win. Because memories can be anything. And now it's like better than... Say, oh, my grandmother left me a car. Yeah? Well, my grandmother left me the idea of a car. And now, that can be any car, really. That's the way I look at it. Tangible things. Sometimes you'd be left something you can't use anymore. That's outdated, like money, or sometimes people leave you food. Will they? I don't know. You can have... Has anyone ever done that? And to my nephew, the contents of my refrigerator and my chest freezer. So, I'd think, oh my God, is that for freezing someone's chest? No, it's like for if you have a lot of meat. So a lot of people that hunt, they hunt before they think. And they'll say, I killed a deer. And then they look at that and they go, uh-oh. I have literally like hours, minutes to do something, to get this into meaty looking meat and then to distribute it among my friends who don't really care for venison. So it's rough. That's why a lot of hunters will just drag it into the road to make it look like it's been hit by a car. And they go, oh, I'm getting out of here. I don't even like. And then they'll go and they'll just buy a reasonable amount of ground venison and pass that off. So that's why I don't hunt. I don't want to kill anything, really. I'll eat things that are already dead, which is why I don't get invited to the memorial services. I go, come on, why waste it? No. There is a taboo about cannibalism. I guess that's good, especially if you live in a capitalist society, because you'd be getting all sorts of sandwiches. I shudder. But... They'll say, well, you can eat it. And there's a movie about that too, isn't it? Where there's, oh, it's ground up people and everything. But when you think about it, isn't that what we do? Isn't that what we serve our pets as ground up pets? No, I don't think so. I'm wrong about that. But I suspect my dog, I don't know about my dogs. I want to observe creatures. Very few creatures, though, will cannibalize. Some won't even eat... They'll eat meat, but they won't eat meat eaters. Like I'll eat a creature, but only vegetarians. It's tough. Not a lot of people want to, like even scavengers. Like I don't know. I've seen vultures just looking at a raccoon. Like, I don't know. Squirrel easy. It's not a lot of it tastes like I don't know. It's like a noisette kind of flavor to it, but. Yeah, they won't eat something that's been eating trash or even meat or anything like that. That's why I worry about some of the crows. Okay, I say, you want some bacon? And they go, yeah, but now nothing's going to eat me. So consider that. So if you want to have I've told this to listeners, if you want to have a sky burial, you need to be probably going like even a vegan diet for a while. So we got to think about these things. Got to plan, especially sky burials because they're illegal. But you arrange for your friends, say, hey, will you? I've always thought about that. That'd be subversive. I want to join some subversive burial society. But I got no way of holding people to it. That's the thing. So I wouldn't know if they did it or not. Say, please, can you drag me out? Can't you drag me out to a cliff? Oh, I don't know if they'll let us do that. How would we do that? You wrap me up in carpet and then just walk up part of the Appalachian Trail to like Preaching Rock and then leave. I don't think you can do that. They would still, somebody would catch on. You can't, we can end up burning me up the mountain. Like, how would we do that? I'm going to go into business, help people take back the control of their remains because I don't want to badmouth an industry, but, the current
funeral industry is satanic and loathsome and preys upon the human beings and the way that we do it. Someone even wrote a great book years ago saying, you know, oh, this is look how awful all our death stuff is and how we buy coffins and all that. And nobody cares because you're grieving. You can't be a good shopper when you're grieving, right? You lose your and they know, people selling you that know that, and they go, "Oh, this is almost ideal. Look at you, completely irrational. This is you have no idea what you need to do you, poor dear? No. Well, we'll guide you through it. Here you go. First of all, you're going to need a 12-foot obelisk made of marble. I mean, if you loved, I don't know whether you loved your mom. We loved mom. Well, then if you loved your mom, what the rule of thumb is a foot for every bunches that you loved your mom. So let's say you loved your mom, 6-foot obelisk of marble. And then the actual coffin or casket or whatever you want to call it, single wide, we call them. It happens to be made out of the same material as Meemaw's double wide was. So it's metal on the outside, and it's like tacky material on the inside, and it seals tight, so it's good for her allergies. No air can get in, and then she'll, instead of, you know how, like, mummies are all dried out, well, this will keep her from drying out by preserving a lot of the moisture and creating a sort of fetid liquid. So that's nice. Let's see. What's some other? It's called putrefaction, and it's a really natural process. What's some other beautiful? Oh, why are you talking about these grim things? Oh, it's all contained because it's, you know, what's good to do is look at them with big eyes and say, how can I not be scared of these things? It gets actually very easy to not be scared. Take my hand. Come with me. All this stuff has been fearified for you. Your fears are being cultivated, just like it's the, I think, I feel like this is happening to me. Like it's, you know, like it is, it's matrixy. But what you're being fed is that you keep, if you stay scared, I can manage to do things. And people have thought that about training dogs and things, you know. Well, you have fear-based obedience. And I guess it kind of works, you know. It makes the dog crazy, and it's bad for the dog. So we learned years ago to control one another using this fear of punishment, fear of everything, death, fear of abandonment, the threat of actual physical pain, in order to ensure predictable behavior. Otherwise, you scare me unless I can control you. So I'll just make you the scared one. And then your fear will keep mine at bay. Is this true? I have no idea. I don't even know. I thought it mattered before. So I'll make sure. I'm pretty sure I'm not doing any harm because nobody is paying any attention to me. And really, I am here to just make beautiful sounds, or at least calming sounds, or at least sounds that might lull you to sleep. Unless you're driving, then wake up. Come on, wake up. Wake up your heart and your mind. Don't fall asleep. My gosh, we don't want to be lulled. I don't want to be lulled. I think I want to wake up. Ah, I'll face it all. That's what I'll do. I'll open my eyes. I won't be scared of other people. I won't be scared of the experience of the unknown, the constant changing. I won't be scared because I have not fixed myself in time with the kiln of rigid thought. Ah, I will stay pliable. I will stay confused. I will stay curious. Oh, I'm interested because I know that even though I think I solved the puzzle, I haven't. I've just made more puzzle, and I love it. And that's not a reason not to do it. So, well, it sounds like you're talking about futility. No, it's not futile if there never is a chance of completing it. Futility implies that what you're doing is never going to get to a goal. If the goal itself doesn't exist, futility doesn't exist. Because if the definition of something depends on something that doesn't exist, if it modifies nothing, no. It's like saying, what are the different color ghosts? There's no ghost colors if the ghosts can't be seen. Yes, you're right. Yes, there is not a fine line between simple and profound. There's not a line at all. It's a chord.
Man, I cannot get this crossword answer.
What's the clue?
The clue is a treat for a dog, and it's B blank L L Y R blank blank.
Oh, that's easy. Billy Ray.
A treat for a dog is the clue.
Yep.
Billy Ray.
Is a treat for a dog, or anyone who likes his music, I imagine.
It's Belly Rub. Oh, hey, that fits. Thanks, Butch. Billy Ray.
Sometimes there's two perfectly good answers. And are you sure? Because I think that one might be Botsy.
No, I'm pretty sure it's Yahtzee.
All right. Just because an answer fits doesn't mean it's the best answer.
Oh, good to know, Belly Rub Cyrus.
Once upon a time, in a small village, lived a tiny man who lived a very uneventful life, which culminated in a very uneventful death.
That sounds like me!
One day, long after his demise, an unconnected event occurred.
I'd like to buy a duck.
Quack.
But little did our duck-purchasing friend realize that the very person selling him the duck had purchased it from the estate of the small dead man with the uneventful life. Don't ask where I got this.
Quack.
All right.
The man took the duck home and before long noticed that the duck was trying to tell him something.
Quack. Quack.
What is it, little duck?
But all the duck could do was go quack, quack, which to the duck is a primal expression of its experience. The end.
Oh, I'm just so glad that I have found a friend like you, somebody else who just sort of drifts along or doesn't know what they're doing, who's not an expert in anything, feels like, they're just another person. But that's not so bad. That's kind of crazy and great at the same time. I don't mind being ordinary. Everybody's ordinary and everybody's extraordinary.
You sound like Mr. Rogers.
Well, he's on to something a little bit there. I believe in that sense of dignity. Say, hey, look, I can still feel like that, feel all right with myself, even though I'm... understand that I am nothing but deficient, but I also understand that other people are nothing else but deficient too, so that helps. I don't know if that's part of the Mr. Rogers thing. He was sort of self-effacing and self-deprecating, and not deprecating, but you know, that's not good. Don't be self-deprecating. Have that dignity, but also don't be arrogant.
Why are you telling me don't do this, don't do that? In case you come work at my restaurant.
Otherwise, I don't mind, I guess. As long as we don't run into one another, you be whatever you want. But I find it's just things go better, whatever the situation is, if you're having to be with others. And so I have to be with Lou and Butchie, and we find, you know, there's certain things that work about the whole not being a jerk thing. So we've integrated that into our lives, and it just saves a lot of energy because nobody wants to be angry or all worked up or anything. We all like to keep everybody calm. There's nothing wrong with that because it's a scary existence. I thought I would. When you're young, you think you accomplish more. You say, oh, I can do this. They tell you that. You can be anything. Well, that's good. They should tell you that because, I mean, just, you know. I mean, ideally, yes, that is true. You could, because time hasn't, but then you can't. Very quickly, that changes.
They should, and about high school, they do tell you. It turns out you can't be anything. It turns out doors have slammed shut in your life, pretty much.
Oh, really? Like what?
Child actor. That's going to stop at 18. There's nothing you can do about it.
You go, but oh, look at my babe, I'm so youthful looking.
You could Johnny Pemberton it and just play. You could play 20 until you're 40, but that's about as close as you can get. Otherwise, I'm sorry. Dreams die. But that's good. Dreams die every morning. That's my. I want to put that on. We'll put that on a T-shirt. Oh, that makes me happy. Dreams die, everybody. My dreams end every morning. Thank goodness, because some of them are tedious. As I get older, I don't have nightmares, and I don't have, like, fantasies. I just have, like, oh, I got it here. Everything out of this room by the end of the day. Party. Okay. That kind of thing. So I don't know if it's a nightmare. Just like a lot of task-oriented things. It's like, oh, we don't know where we are. Now what? Like, oh, great. And we're being chased. Okay, maybe it is kind of nightmarish. But the ones I used to have as a child were even more terrifying. Like, you'd think you were awake, and then there was some kind of malevolent spirit or ghost about to steal your soul, and then you'd scream. I don't have those. I just have the, you know, I've got paperwork. I have a job. There's a deadline. Doing what? I don't even know. I don't know. Is it something I got to fill out? Deadline is approaching. For what? Yeah, not a lot of those. You're dying, they tell me in my dreams sometimes. I go, okay, isn't everyone? No, I mean acutely. Oh, shoot, what do I do? Nothing. Well, that's liberating and frustrating, right? There's nothing you can do, and they tell you. There's nothing left to do. You'd think that'd be good news. What's the news, doctor? Well, there's nothing left that we can do. Oh, excellent. All done. Everything ticked off my list. Now what? Free play, basically. So you'd think that'd be exciting, but people are like, oh, no. I'm going to miss the constant feeling of dread and having to do things. Yes, well, no, you won't. That's a good thing, too. You won't be able to miss. That's wonderful. I always thought heaven seemed, if there's no heaven, I won't be disappointed. It seems scary to me, like joining the army or something. Yeah, when you die, you have to go to a separate place. You might not even know anybody. You'll know people, but you haven't seen them for years. It'd be like your great aunts. You know? Okay. Well, you can see, like, well, people your age, too, like from back home, like John and all. All right, but still, it's going to be lonely. But this way, you say, oh, no, you won't even know it happened. Really? I think that's good. Is that good? I don't know anymore. I never did. No, I did. That's the thing. Maybe I did. That's what I'm saying. Say, I used to be so certain. Oh, well. I mean, maybe you were right at that instant, but you know, what are you going to do? It's like an athletic career. So I used to be hitting, you know, 400. Well, it's got to end. It doesn't go on. It wasn't there before. You weren't hitting 400 when you were 10 years old, and then you're not hitting 400 when you're 60. Big deal. You are, maybe, if you're Oscar Peterson. Not Oscar Peterson. Oscar Charleston. Oscar Peterson. The musician. Oscar Charleston is the baseball player. Woo! You get a little older, and what happens to you? Your head gets full of mush. Mine's been full of mush because of the, because if I have an Egyptian ear, nose, and throat doctor that I've mentioned before, named Egon Meniz. You go, well, that's a Portuguese name. Well, I don't know. He's not, I don't feel like he's being honest with me. My friend, are you talking about something specific, sir? If you are, please get to the point. Now, radio, a lot of people are laser-focused about what point they want to get to, especially a lot of podcasts, too, are fighting for attention. And are you fighting for attention, Hardy? No. Well, should you be? Why would I want to do that? No, I am not fighting for attention. Then why are you on the radio? Unless it's something special. Everything's got to be something special. Go to the grocery store, all right? And there are some items that are just always there. I don't understand what's wrong with that. They're called staples. And, they don't have to be exceptional. And everything wants to be noticed. Why does butter want to be noticed so bad? You know, just sometimes, and a lot of products get that idea. They go, we'll write the word butter on it. Because why would we want to make a big, we're going to have somebody dressed up as butter and they're going to set themselves on fire in the store. And people remember that. You don't have to. Not everything has to be a spectacle or special. And I feel like I'm just a generic radio friend. The way there has always never been necessarily, not really, there isn't. Is there? I don't know. I've never has a radio station paid such little attention to its content. I feel, which is a blessing. I don't know if you know what a gift to mankind that is. Because if you do not make a space for chance, you can't have true evolution. Everything will stagnate. Because what you've done is you've Irish elked yourself out of giant antlers into extinction. To continue to grow, you must change constantly. To survive, you must not necessarily be who you were and who you are now. And you go, well, that seems like great inconsistency, and I'm taking a lot of risks, and there's chance and everything like that. Oh, it's the way of the universe that we're in. It's completely natural. It's completely natural. So that's why I feel like we're blessed on this radio station, where the opportunity for chance is there. And when the opportunity for chance, it's like little weak parts where stuff can break through from other possible worlds. It's like a hernia. That's what it is. It's a hernia in space-time where stuff can break through from other possible worlds and get in and strangulate. That's what I'm trying to do. I want your abdominal wall of certainty to burst. And I want guts from the fifth dimension to come flooding out and protrude so that you notice them and you become cognizant that there's other ways and you wake up. You go, that's terrifying. Wake up. Do the meditation of your corrupt body. It's wonderful. Have it fly apart into pieces. You become everything. And it's wonderful to feel that way. To me it is, especially if I've got to go do any kind of socializing. I say, before I go socialize, I like to meditate and imagine that wild beasts are tearing my body apart. And then I don't feel self-conscious at parties. I am so blessed to be with you. Thank you for joining me. This show and my whole life I call Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County and New York City, New York, and online at WFMU.org worldwide. Oh, how great to be with you, and hopefully I'll be with you again next week.